a story. Ken Davis writes about a woman who was looking out her window, and she saw her German Shepherd shaking the life out of a neighbor's rabbit. And her family and the neighbor's family did not get along very well. So this was shaping up to be like a disaster, okay? And so she grabbed a broom, ran out, and was just wailing on the dog until the dog would release this extremely dead rabbit from its mouth, all right? And she panicked, didn't know what to do. So she grabbed the rabbit, ran inside, gave it a bath, blow-dried it up to its original fluffiness, and combed that rabbit until it looked just perfect, just right. And she snuck into her neighbor's yard and propped it up in the cage. And an hour later, she heard a cry. And so she leaned out and said to her neighbor, "What's wrong?" "My rabbit! My rabbit!" the neighbor cried out. "It died 2 weeks ago. We buried it in its back." Now, the ancient peoples, the peoples of Jesus' time, they knew that dead rabbits tend to stay dead, all right? And some of us, you know, who are farmers, who have pets, maybe some, you know, rabbits or whatever it is we have, for those of you who do, you also tend to know that you know, rabbits tend to stay dead. So there was a scholar, N.T. Wright is his name, and he noted that during the first century, during this time around before Jesus, actually, there were many who claimed to be the Messiah. They were would-be Messiahs. And then when the Roman folks would take them and kill them on a cross, that they would die, like Jesus did. And this writer notes that that there was never once at all ever this slightest mention by any of these disappointed followers of this hero about a resurrection. They knew better, right? They knew better. So this morning, it's different. This morning, it's different. And I want to read for you what's different. This comes in Matthew's Gospel, chapter 28. Let's listen to what's different. After the Sabbath, at dawn on the first day of the week, Mary Magdalene and the other Mary went to look at the tomb. There was a violent earthquake. For an angel, hold on, you know what? I want to read the John Gospel. I read the Matthew one during the resurrection, during this morning's sunrise service. I wasn't there. I don't think I was there. I want to read from John's Gospel for you. So you got a preview, all right? Let's start again. This is chapter 20 in John's. Early on the first day of the week, while it was still dark, Mary Magdalene went to the tomb and saw that the stone had been removed from the entrance. So she came running to Simon Peter and the other disciple, the one who Jesus loved, and said, "They have taken the Lord out of the tomb, and we don't know where they have put him." So Peter and the other disciple started for the tomb. Both were running, but the other disciple outran Peter and reached the tomb first. He bent over and looked in, but he did not go in. Rather, he looked in at the strips of linen lying there, but he did not go in. Then Simon Peter came along behind him and went straight into the tomb. He saw the strips of linen lying there, as well as the cloth that had been wrapped around Jesus' head. The cloth was still lying in its place, separate from the linen. Finally, the other disciple, who had reached the tomb first, also went inside. He saw and believed. They still did not understand from Scripture that Jesus had to rise from the dead. Then the disciples went back to where they were staying. Now Mary stood outside the tomb crying. As she wept, she bent over to look into the tomb and saw two angels in white seated where Jesus' body had been, one at the head and the other at the foot. They asked her, "Woman, why are you crying?" "They have taken my Lord away," she said, "and I don't know where they have put him." At this, she turned around and saw Jesus standing there, but she did not realize that it was Jesus. He asked her, "Woman, why are you crying? Why are you looking? What are you looking for?" Thinking he was a gardener, she said, "Sir, if you have carried him away, tell me where you have put him, and I will get him." Jesus said to her, "Mary." She turned toward him and cried out in Aramaic, "Rabboni," which means teacher. Jesus said, "Do not hold on to me, for I have not yet ascended to the Father. Go instead to my brothers and sisters and tell them, I am ascending to my Father and your Father, to my God and your God." Mary Magdalene went to the disciples with the news, "I have seen the Lord," and she told them that he had said these things to her. So this foot race is on. Mary, before they run out to the tomb, Peter and the beloved disciple, Mary goes out, and she goes out to the tomb, and she looks in, and she sees these linen cloths, and then she goes back to the disciples. And then she tells them what's going on, and then Peter and the other disciple, another disciple, they ran out there. And the one who was faster, he's eager to get there. But did he go into the tomb? No, he didn't go into the tomb. He kind of did this. You know, he get the sort of the kick the tires thing, you know. He didn't get in the car and start the engine. He kind of kicked the tire. And, you know, I want to tell you, in all fairness, that, you know, I'm a pretty bold guy, and I'll take some risks, but there are times when I'm feeling a little queasy about things myself. I wouldn't be surprised if I also would run out there and maybe be the first one there and look in, like, "Oh, isn't that nice?" Our family went fishing one time, guess who put the worm on the hook? It wasn't me. All right? My wife Heidi put the worm on the hook, all right? So sometimes, you know, I'll feel queasy about doing something. And so I expect that's what's going on for this other disciple. He's running out there. I want to get there. But then he's sort of doing the little, "Yeah, looks good. Good. Now we can go home." Now we can go home and carry on life like it was before. So he and Mary both had done this sort of this peeking around the corner thing. But Peter, he of the slow of foot and maybe slow of mind, and you picture him lumbering out there real slow, and he gets out there, and he goes, "All right." And he goes straight into the tomb. He walks straight into the tomb. Okay? Don't you want one of those kind of guys on your team? Huh? He walked straight into the tomb. Now, there are a lot of reasons why we wouldn't want to walk straight into the tomb. One is that some of us are scared of death. Scared out of our wits to talk about death. If you don't believe me, sit down at the kitchen table, invite your friends, do it today, all right? After worship, and sit down, you're having, you know, your coffee cake and your orange juice. Sit down and say, hey, let's talk about death and see what happens. All right? A real conversation starter. We're afraid of death. We don't want to talk about it. And yet, John went straight into the tomb. Did he go into the tomb? He went into the tomb. And the air had to have been putrid. The acidic smell of a decaying body is what we could expect. And so going into the tomb is not for the queasy of heart, is it? And going into the tomb, I wonder if there are other things that we're afraid of about the tombs of our life. The tombs of despair, maybe the tombs of pain. Maybe in our relationships or struggles or, you know, failures of the past. Maybe it's something that hurts in our body. And we're afraid that it'll never be something that we can be free of. At least while we walk the planet, if even we can walk. And so, we're afraid to go in to the tombs of our own despair. Even for us who are followers, who are believers, there are times when we're afraid to go into the tomb. I mean, here we are in this morning's story, Mary Magdalene, the Virgin Mother, said, I better go back and give a little report to the others. Maybe somebody else can go in there. And the beloved disciple, I'm going to let Peter go in first, see if it's okay. Now, you know what? Not only might we be afraid of death, but also we might be afraid of life. Because you see, Peter went into the tomb, and what did he find when he went straight into the tomb? Huh? He found it empty. There were linen cloths there. In fact, there were two separate linen cloths, one for his head and the other one for his body. And they were neatly folded. And so the tomb was empty. And I don't know about you, but not only am I afraid of putting worms on hooks, but, you know, I might be afraid to go into an empty tomb. Because if the tomb is empty, our life is never, ever going to be the same. If the tomb is empty, that means the body is loose. If the tomb is empty, that means that none other than the Lord is loose. And there's a guy wreaking havoc, the havoc of love, on a loveless planet out around on the land. And he's doing exactly what he'd done before. A countercultural guy, giving release to the captives, sight to the blind. Proclaiming liberty to all at the year of the Lord's favor. And the year of the Lord's favor ain't 1 year, it ain't 365 days, it's for us. And so going into an empty tomb is scary. Because walking into an empty tomb means that he's alive. He's out and loose. And if I say that I believe in him, then he's got a claim on me. He might move me. And he will. So if you're someone with us today and you're afraid of death, and maybe you're in despair, maybe your own tomb is a tomb of isolation, of loneliness, of wishing you could have some real community and connection with God, yourself, with the world, I want you to take an opportunity right now and say, God, I want to walk into the tomb and see if you're alive for real. I want you to walk into the tombs of my life and bring me alive. If that's you, would you talk to someone you know, you trust, or talk to me after worship? Say, Sayer, I'm walking into that empty tomb. I want to say yes to this guy, Jesus. I don't know all about him, and I don't know all the steps of faith, but I'm going to take one step into the tomb. And the step of faith. It says, I want to discover what this is about. I want to find out if it's real. And trust me, it is. Now, if you say yes, and for those who have said yes in the past, is that you may want to, you may need to walk back into that tomb again. You may need to walk back into the tomb. It's empty. And what you're going to find is a Savior who's calling you into the empty tombs of life. Actually, the first thing he does is he calls you into the dead body tombs, those smelly places. You know, he's calling you into those places where you got to hook worms onto the hook. He's calling you to the places of the tombs of despair, the tombs of death, the tombs of those in need, and the tombs of those who yearn for something real in life. It may be to help out those who are struggling financially, to help them create a budget. It may be with your fellow students who struggle with their own self-esteem, and that they're bullies in school, and there's a way that you can enter into their despair. Because he's going to call you there. And he's calling his church into those places of despair. And we're afraid to go in. We really are. But you see, we're like Mary and like the other disciple, and we come in. We're out front and we're peeking in. But there's something that's drawing us in. There's something that's pulling us into the tomb. And we're about to go in. And we want you to join us. We want you to join us on a journey of going in and to see what's there. And if it's empty, our life will be forever changed. But the way we went in will not be the way we came out. It'll be forever, forever changed.